Welcome to a Wednesday, a confused, frustrated Wednesday. And here we are, where the federal government just had another press conference, and I'm getting a lot of Twitter saying, hey, wait, it's not the federal government's job to get boosters in arms. It's the province's job. That's right. I get it. I understand the system. It's okay. We don't have to learn how to boil water here. We know the recipe. We know that the provinces have responsibility and so does the federal government. How can they work together to do the one thing we need to do? That's been my whole point today, which is boost mass vaccination of boosters as fast as possible to prevent healthcare systems from being overwhelmed so schools and businesses can open up. That is going to clearly be a shared responsibility. Provinces don't have the capacity to do it. They need to request instantly, and Quebec's done it with 200 military members, but they need way more. We need to have a mass emergency mobilization. The federal government's got to help the provinces do it. And the provinces have to demand it so we can get boosters in arms. That is the clear way out if Justin Trudeau's right and we've got the boosters. And if boosters genuinely prevent hospitalization, then we're good. Instead, we're doing a million different things. But the war room can take this up. What should we do about Omicron? What do the provinces need to do? Do curfews work? Is it about tests, PCRs? Zane Velji, who has been doing an absolutely stellar job, and I thank him for sitting in the chair when I was away, the political campaign strategist, partner at Northweather, formerly worked at with the Calgary mayor, Nad Nenshi, brilliant, handsome, and happy new year to you. And then, of course, the wonderfully talented and mellifluous Tasha Carradin, who's also a gifted writer and a principal at Navigator Limited with the national political columnist with Post Media. Happy New Year to you and your, I think he's the one, your family, your one beautiful child. And then, of course, the ponytailed and hirsute genius himself, the lawyer, the politician, the public servant, the man who always is there to help us guide with his principled views of the world, Tom Mulcair, CTV political analyst, former NDP leader, and genuinely lovely guy. Hello, everyone. Happy New Year.
Hey, happy New Year, brother.
Have a good year.
That's all the time we've got. Zane, great job.
Thank you, brother.
It's so great to be back, and everybody's here, and I hope your loved ones are doing okay. I'm going to start with Tash, and then we'll go Ontario, and then we'll go Quebec, and then we'll go out west to Alberta, BC. But Tash, you wrote a column about Ontario. Here we are today. You know, Justin Trudeau's talking about, you know, we got 140,000 new tests are coming, 140 million new tests are coming. That's great, but it seems like we're bumbling towards Bethlehem here. What's gone wrong and what's gone right?
Well, what's gone wrong is the government's waited. And it's not just Ontario, but I'll focus on Ontario because that's, like you said, I wrote about it. I'm living it here in Ontario. The government knew back in the middle of December, the modeling, if contacts weren't reduced by 50%, what would happen in terms, because it's an incredibly transmissible virus. Omicron is not like the COVID of yore. We're kind of back to where we were almost a couple of years ago before we had the vaccine, when people were, you know, really paranoid almost, that everyone was sort of theoretically infectious. Well, actually today, with the number of infections that are going up, hundreds of thousands a day, as Doug Ford said, it's going to be, potentially, we don't even know because we can't measure it anymore. Yes, everyone you cross, everywhere you go, you'll probably, you know, run into someone who's got the virus. Now, you won't get as sick. That's coming out too, which is great. But the sheer number of people sick at the same time is what the problem is. The government knew that was happening. It knew hospitals would be overwhelmed if it didn't do things. But it just sleepwalked. It didn't put in. It reduced by 50% retail capacity. It, you know, it didn't allow religious services apart from certain things like funerals. It didn't do what it had to do to reduce contact. That's what it had to do. And so what it should have done is what it's doing now. Closing restaurants and bars. I hate to say it. I love both, but closing gyms. Love those too. Because it has to close down places where transmission risk is high and where people congregate. They didn't want to do it before Christmas. It's political. They didn't want to be the Grinch. They didn't do it. But now it's going to be worse because now they're doing it. Now the kids are out of school. Thanks a lot. Our hospitals already, it's doubled. They just announced today the number of people in intensive care has doubled in a day. I mean, this is crazy. So it's going to be bad.
Yeah, and I don't mind. Listen, and Tom, you can tell me if these, I keep asking in Quebec if curfews actually, there's any data that curfews work. I haven't seen it, but okay. And they've got a much slower booster rollout, which I can't understand. How's it going in Quebec? What's going right and what's going wrong there?
I think you've just given the two most important elements. Nobody can figure out why it's being so slow rolling out the booster shots, because the doses are indeed there. The federal government has made sure of that. With regard to the curfew, a year ago, we imposed a curfew because the government had at the last minute said, oh, sorry, we can't have Christmas get-togethers. And what happened indeed was that the numbers went through the roof and they had to backpedal. And they tried to tell people to cancel their Christmas and New Year's party and nobody listened. So the numbers were nuts. We imposed a curfew. Largely, it achieved the result. It was the circuit breaker that we needed, because there's a mentality thing too. It changes from place to place with regard to environment and what people listen to and what they don't listen to. Quebecers tend to take everything the government says as just a suggestion. But if you're told last year, if you weren't home by 8 o'clock, you'd get a $1,500 ticket. Well, that's a good way to get people's attention, Evan. This time around, ordinary folks are pushing back, saying, what is this idea of a curfew from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m.? What is happening from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m.? It doesn't make any sense. People are pushing back. People who have been preaching, go get vaccinated, wear your masks, they're all saying, look, Legault's lost the plan here. He's losing it in the lights. He's exhausted, like a lot of the political leaders, and I guess we've got to have empathy for that. But right now, the decision-making process here in Quebec had already changed from public health to politics, and now they've completely lost it, and Quebecers don't know where they stand. We're being told their kids are going to be at home for another couple of weeks. They're saying that it's going to be online learning, but good luck with that. You can't set that up overnight. And the parents are worried. The daycares were told. Legault went so far as to say if kids had it and they could go back to their daycare without any isolation period. They had to change that overnight when the City of Montreal Public Health Department declared, please ignore what Premier Legault and Quebec City just said. You can imagine if John Tory went before the microphones and said, ignore what Doug Ford just said, what the reaction would be.
Yeah,
that's where we are in Quebec right now.
Oh, that's incredible. Zane, what's going on in Alberta, BC? What's going right? What's going wrong?
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing some of the similar narratives coming out of it. And I think one of them is exactly what Tom mentioned here, which is politics entering the decision-making cycle. You know, if there's one thing that Jason Kenney's been consistent on is that he has governed largely through politics. And when you look at what he's doing or not doing here, you see that, you know, he talks about 34,000 active cases here in Alberta. We have the same conversations going on about hospital capacity, but any pathway towards actions or closures almost seems to be off the table, at least as it relates to this week and next. And we know this thing can change very, very quickly. But Jason Kenney knows clearly that he's got a far-right constituency that he needs in a couple months to keep his job. So he's going to be very careful in how he tiptoes with any restrictions for Omicron. And, you know, there is a case to be made. This is not wild speculation, but there is a case to be made that his lack of action might actually be perhaps the quote-unquote right strategy here for Alberta, especially if hospitalizations and ICU numbers, which they are right now, remain relatively stable. Now, there's nothing to say that they don't follow the pathway that Ontario and Quebec are on, but it's very much looking like Jason Kenney is going to keep doubling down on his lack of new restrictions, which is now being celebrated by more than just the anti-vax crowd, right? And I think that's the fundamental change here, is that there's no longer just two camps, people who want restrictions and people who want no restrictions. It's now way more nuanced. People are actually asking, don't just give me the output, give me what the outcome is. Give me the sense of how effective what you're doing it is. Stop doing stuff just because it's politically expedient or performative. And I think that coalition of folks that are perhaps, you know, not so keen on lockdowns is growing and growing, not because they're anti-vax, because the conversation is getting much more nuanced.
Yeah, I don't know if there's any more political hay to be made. You know, we talked about this a lot, Tash, and then we'll talk about this in the next segment. But, you know, in the first wave of the pandemic, you know, incumbent governments who handled it well were rewarded. I don't think there's any more political rewards, as my friend Tim Powers was telling me the other day, in this. And the reason is people want precision now. They don't just want warm words and big blanket things. They want a precise plan to get the hell out of this thing. Now, I guess my question I'll take a break and I'll come back to you, Tash, with the war room. What do they need to do? What is the plan people need to see? And from political leaders now, I'll put that to the war room next. We'll take a break.
Let me be perfectly clear.
Putting out misinformation.
And we hear them.
Misleading politics.
What's really important here.
Spreading it online.
Unequivocally.
The War Room.
Zane Velji, Tasha Carrot, and Tom Mulcair are inside the War Room. Look, businesses are shut and schools are delayed, and we just have some breaking news out of Quebec right now on schools. Oh, man. not good news. Quebec says, the education minister says schools will reopen on January 17th. Similar, by the way, in other provinces like Ontario. And they'll have more rapid tests to young students. Tom, Tash, Zane, let's get into this. The cost of online learning, mental cost, social cost, massive. Parents are frustrated. Yep. The economic cost. This is driving people crazy. Look, we know the answer here. Isn't the answer mass vaccination? The problem, like, Tom, what is it? Maybe you can explain, because I've been railing about this as we get in the plan. Like, if Justin Trudeau's right, and I've questioned him about this, and we have enough boosters for everyone right now, and I know it's the province's responsibility to roll them out. If they're having capacity issues, why don't they request the federal government to come in and spend the next 8-9 days, and we'll get everybody vaccinated? And that literally is the singularly best weapon out of this thing.
Because they don't want to be stuck with the responsibility and the liability if things go south.
Ding, ding, ding.
The federal government has been able to say, we've done our job. We've got the doses. We've got the testing kits, the rapid tests. We're sending them to you. You deal with this. You want a few hundred people from the army. We're not sure what they're doing, but we've got a few hundred here in Quebec right now. Fine. We're going to show that we care. But you keep pushing back. Every time we've tried to come up with best practices, you keep saying, it's a provincial responsibility. You deal with it.
Tash?
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I think there's that is a big piece of it, is that the federal government wants to be the angel in the scenario, and they're here's the stuff. Go to it. They know. I mean, let's face it, there's elections happening in Ontario, too, in June. No love lost there in terms of Doug Ford and Justin Trudeau. So, I hate that politics is, this is what makes me crazy, because this is now, it is kids. There is a big hurdle. Parents are still hesitant about vaccinating kids, especially under the age of 12. There is an issue there. And getting past that hesitancy is something that, you know, that is, I'm not 100% sure how you do that, but there has to be a way to do that. I've seen the ads in Quebec TV and stuff that, you know, trying to say how the doses are less and to assuage people's fears. But that, I think if, I hate to say it, kids start ending up in hospital in greater numbers, which they already are, then maybe parents will say, okay, I'll do it. But there is still that vaccine hesitancy as well.
But isn't it on the provinces too, Zane? Like, let's be candid. The provinces like Ontario hadn't spent their COVID relief fund money. That according to the financial officer back in, they analyzed it back in September, out of the $2.7 billion, they hadn't even spent over $600 million of that. The first tranche of it. Provinces aren't requesting the help, and that's what's got to happen.
Well, of course, and this is all about political incentive, right? If you're Justin Trudeau and the federal Liberals, your incentive, why would you do more when you're already being celebrated to the max for fulfilling your responsibility to what Tom and Tash have said? And if you're the provinces, why request more help when there's really no way to disprove your singular political tactic, which is the lockdown? Right. A lockdown is very interesting. You can't disprove it. If case counts go down, pat on the back. We did a lockdown. If case counts go up, this is out of our control. It's massive. The worst is yet to come. At least we did a lockdown. So politicians are viewing this through the lens of political incentive. And, you know, Evan, I've heard you earlier on the show talking about your, you know, your 30-day or 3-week ambitious plan. I would just underline that that is what we need here, right? A plan that has provinces and the feds working together, saying third dose, 3 weeks, 30 million people, right? That is what we need. But the political incentives, people are sticking in their lane because there's no incentive to go out of that lane.
Like the costs of this are overwhelming, Tom. Like if the fundamental goal is, look, and everyone keeps saying it, the data shows that a booster shot at least basically prevents largely hospitalization. And
exactly,
what we're all trying to do is protect the healthcare system from being overwhelmed. Yep. And to do we're going to sacrifice kids at schools and businesses. So it seems to me the faster we get boosters in, the more we protect our healthcare system. That means the provinces should all get together on a phone call with the Prime Minister and say, let's all work together. Whatever you need from the Army, the Prime Minister can offer. If you're a province, wouldn't you want to? I just think if you're a Premier, the first Premier that says, I'm going to inoculate everybody within the next 20 days or whatever, or 15 days, I'm working with the federal government to do so in a mass emergency mobilization of vaccination. I think that leader wins the next election hands down.
Fair enough. And we've also got a provincial election coming up this year in Quebec. But Evan, at the same time, there's another problem that we're looking at. It's that the 10% of the population that's not vaccinated, Canada has a very high rate of vaccination, one of the highest in the world. but it's the 10% that's taking up the vast majority of those places we just talked about in the intensive care unit and in the hospital wards generally. So that's the big fight that's going on in a lot of countries right now. I don't know if you saw what President Macron of France had to say about the anti-vaxxers yesterday. He said he was going to do everything he could to tick them off. And he said much stronger language than that in a serious interview, saying, look, I'm going to make sure that they're not allowed anywhere. They can't get into a restaurant because they're still open. Here in Quebec, we've said they're not allowed into anything from a liquor store to the pot store or anything else. We're doing what we can to make life miserable for the people who still refuse to get vaccinated, because they're the ones who risk toppling the healthcare system. And it's a paradox that the average Quebecer, and I assume the average Canadian's the same, is saying, I don't accept that. We've all gone through all these sacrifices. We've all done the right thing. We've gotten vaccinated. And this small proportion is still going to be the people who risk toppling the whole system, which is, as you correctly say, Evan, the number one thing that we've been trying to avoid since the beginning.
But here's my point. Yeah, go ahead, Tash.
I was going to say, the problem is those people are now saying, look, you've got two shots and a booster, and you're still sick. I cannot tell you how many people I know have had three vaccines. They are, and some, really sick. So,
but not hospitalized. The data said, just let's be clear, they are not in hospitals, and that's the metric.
But when you're hospitalized, that's not true. ICU. Hospitalized, still. You look at hospice, say so many have cases, so many. The point is, percentage-wise, yes, unvaccinated are far higher than the 10% representation of the population in ICU, exactly, and in hospitals. But that's what the problem is. They spin that, and that goes out there. And then when you have the prime minister calling them, you know, what did he say, sexist and misogynist? I mean, I don't know where he got racist, that language. That does not help either. That was so irresponsible of Trudeau to do, because that just riles people up and say, see, it's a demonization thing. I mean, that was inexcusable. The issue with the anti-vax is that they don't see the big picture. They are depriving people who need healthcare of healthcare, surgeries, cancer, hip replacement, you name it. That message is what has to go out. And you need to have ad campaigns on TV with a person saying, I couldn't get my hip done because you wouldn't get a shot.
See, I'm
guilty and bad. Because that is what they're really doing.
Macron is facing an election. And I get why he's doing it. And Trudeau said those inappropriate comments during the election. I think that stuff's inexcusable. And Zane, I'll put it to you, but I think the math is slightly different. I'll just push back against Tash and Tom. I'm with you on the anti-vax and the non-vaccinated who take up way disproportionate amounts of hospitalization and ICU, but the system could actually handle them if they weren't worried about another wave from the rest of hospitalizations, that's what the booster shot is supposed to prevent, Zane.
Yes, point is that's where you say to people, because you're in that bed, a person who needed cancer treatment can't get it. That's the message. The only thing you can say to an anti-vax person to legitimately guilt them into it is to say that's what you're doing. And that's not the message that's being sent.
The question is, which is a fight we want to pick right now? Do we want to pick the fight of we're not tracking case counts, there's not enough antigen tests, that the anti-vax continue to be, anti-vax? Or do you want to pick the fight that says, let's get third doses in arms, right? So this is the question of, do we want a multi-front war or a single front war? Because we can go with the multi-front war. It's just that means that our slow burn on third doses continues because we're not laser-like in our approach.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think anti-vaxxers should drive the campaign. I understand their impact, Tom, but we know that the positive answer is getting boosters in people's arms. But boy, I feel
everybody whose scope of practice includes the right to give you a jab in the arm, whether it's a dentist or a veterinarian, should be on the front line right now delivering
totally
those third doses.
Well, guys, and retired professionals. Yeah.
Okay, I got to take it. But Tash, Tom, and Zane, I've booked our flight on the Sunwing. It's a charter.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'll look forward to that, and we'll talk about
that. You're an influencer.